One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Save big on everything you need when you shop at Menards. Spidey Electric smart home products make everyday living simply smarter. Stay connected to home while you're away with wireless outdoor security cameras. Control all your smart home products from anywhere using one easy-to-use app. View our entire selection of Fight Electric smart home products today on Menards.com. Plus, check out our weekly flyer for other great deals happening this week.
Save big money at Menards.
Back, let's get it, guys. Welcome to another episode. I'm Katie Hettenbach, and this is Katie Afraidy on the Fangoria Network. And I'm so excited to be back in person. This is huge. This is gonna be very fun. And without further ado, let me introduce the person next to me. Oh my goodness.
Finally.
You're like, I've been sitting here for ages. Let me freaking do this.
It's been almost a full minute and I haven't said anything yet.
It's super awkward. Okay. I guess I'll do it. He's a writer, actor, producer. He has a podcast called Paranormal Bookshelf.
Ooh. Richard Hatem's Paranormal Bookshelf.
Richard Hatem's Paranormal Bookshelf. But it's Richard Hatem.
Because I knew that putting my name in it would really sell it.
Oh, 100%. 100%.
Otherwise, it would be nothing.
No, I mean, you know.
Yeah, it would be absolutely.
It's like, you know, Oprah's whatever.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah. Which is why I was like, when I was horror at the store, everyone's like, who's this whore? And I'm like, no.
Well, you wanted people to know, so you put your name in
it. Yes, I was like, Katie Afraidy.
By the way, is a great title.
Thank you so much. It's a blessing and a curse because now people just think that's my full legal name.
Well, shouldn't it be? It's easy enough to change.
It is, but here's the thing. When you're doing like stand-up and someone introduces you as Katie Afraidy and you don't have any horror material, it's a little... I'm like, I don't... I guess...
We could come up with horror material so quickly.
We totally could. Oh my goodness. Thank you so much for being here, though.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so glad to be back here, your first person live
in
person.
This is great. So we're going to talk the Mothman prophecies. We're going to talk paranormal stuff. We're going to talk cryptids. We're going to talk everything. But let's start first with horror movies. Are you a horror movie fan?
I used to be more than I am now.
Okay.
So I'll tell you that my big ones are things like John Carpenter's The Thing.
Of course. It's amazing.
American Werewolf in London. Mm-hmm. That era. So you see where I am.
Yes.
You know, The Exorcist.
Yeah.
The Shining. Things yes. like that. That I don't know. Those to me feel very comforting.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying horror movies nowadays don't make me feel comforted, but they don't.
Yeah.
And maybe that's me. Maybe that's not them.
Yeah.
You know, it's a me thing.
Totally.
Also, my wife isn't really into horror.
Yeah.
And really, when you're married, you, unless your wife or husband or partner is into a particular thing,
mm-hmm.
your odds of actually ever watching those things goes way, way down.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
Because you sort of, you know, how often are you just, you know, hey, I've got the TV to myself mm-hmm. and I'm not going to watch porn.
I can't say that's ever occurred, but I love that for you. That's amazing. Okay.
I don't end up seeing a lot, but yeah. my kids are really into it.
Yeah.
I'm on to the horror movies again, porn.
Okay, I just want to make sure.
My kids are super into it.
Thank you so much for making sure.
For a minute, Richie was getting afraidy.
Yeah, it happens. It happens on this podcast. Sometimes people get a little afraidy.
So,
I'm gonna cry.
Through them, I'm trying to watch mm-hmm. more. My son, Dashiell, when he was 15, said, and this was one of the times my wife was out of town, and mm-hmm. I'm like, hey, you know, you're into horror, we can do it now.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, okay, I want you to watch Hereditary. And I'm like, this is amazing, because yeah. he's not a kid who shares a lot with me.
Yeah.
Certainly not a kid who's coming to me with...
He's like, hey, Dad, want a bonding experience? Let's watch Hereditary.
Yeah.
That's an intense bonding experience.
Well, I heard about it, mm-hmm. and I was familiar with it, okay. but I had no idea what it was about. I'd mm-hmm. never seen it. So we watched it, and after a while, I began to realize, oh, this is about a 15-year-old boy descending into homicidal madness.
And you're like... Hello, 911. Hi.
Right.
Yes.
It's like, really?
Yeah.
You wait till your mom's out of town mm-hmm. to lay this on me.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. The kid becomes king of hell.
Yeah.
The movie's over. But I was still honored that he shared something with me. So even if that's what it was,
that's so sweet.
Isn't it?
That he was like, you know what? I might be a homicidal maniac too, but.
And this is how he chose to tell me.
I love that. You know what? Good for him.
I know.
You know what? For a teenage boy to speak his mind.
I know.
That's big. So even if it's just through this movie.
Okay. So I have three sons.
Okay.
Okay. 29, 27, and 17.
Okay.
Okay. And I would say my oldest kid, Owen,
mm-hmm.
was pretty good about, oh, I've got a movie I want to show you.
Mm-hmm.
Spencer, we would do it all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, it was part of our language. Here, I'll show you this, you mm-hmm. show me that. And this was not it. So I was thrilled.
Yeah.
And then we've watched other ones, and he's really upfront about the ones that he doesn't like. He's like, we'll watch something and he'll go, that was boring, you know?
Okay.
Or I only kept watching that because I thought you wanted to. You know, and
I mean, I've been there with my parents with some movies.
Well, I mean, do you go to them with stuff?
I try to, but they usually go no.
Oh, so I mean, they just shut
usually
you down.
It's okay. Yeah, it's usually like my mom is easier, but my dad's like pretty much a stickler. But they'll be like, oh, we want to show you this movie. On my birthday, they wanted to show me a Man Called Otto. With Tom Hanks.
Oh, okay.
Okay, it's about suicide. I'm watching it on my birthday, my 27th birthday, and I'm like, hey, starting the birthday off real depressing. Crying, I already cried on my birthday because I'm aging. I don't want to think about suicide too. It's my, again, 27th year. I can't be, this is the year shit happens. I can't.
They weren't aware how close to home.
Yeah, I was like, hey guys. Settle down. But, you know, again, they just wanted, they're like, oh, we saw this. We thought it was good. You might like it. I'm like, Hell, I don't watch. Why do people watch? I can't watch sad movies. I'd rather watch people get butchered.
Yeah, or than watch. Well, it's weird. Yeah. Okay, so your parents aren't showing you movies that are from their era, obviously, because they're probably my age. Like, all I want is to sit down with my youngest child and go, here's Harold and Maude.
Yeah.
Please love it. Mm-hmm. And I'm terrified because I know he won't.
Yeah, you're so like, well, I can't. Well, this is where you just go, hey, we're just going to watch a movie. You know, I you might like it, you might not, but I do think you should see it because it is, you know, like my mom showed me Fried Green Tomatoes really young.
I love these movies. These are very.
Forrest Gump.
Forrest Gump.
You know, God, like these classics. Are sort of. But the weird one that they showed me last year, it was like raining, and they're like, oh, we should watch a movie together. What should we pick? And we're like scrolling because they have cable. So it's always whatever is on cable or HBO. But I was like, oh, YouTube has movies for free that just have ads. Let's watch something. We watched, oh my God, what is it called? The movie with.
I'll know it.
It's like a horror movie with Chevy Chase.
You don't modern problem. Any movie with Chevy Chase,
but,
I've heard is. Oh, if you were there for the making of it,
but. It's. Oh my gosh! Oh, Nothing But Trouble. Have you seen that?
Nothing. Oh, John Candy's in that.
Yeah, it is literally. It is a horror movie, and I was not
right.
I was not expecting that from my parents because they'd hate horror.
But
they
was it straight up? I haven't seen it. Was it straight up horror or was it sort of funny 80s horror?
Funny 80s horror, but them to show it to me, I was like, oh, this is horror. And you're showing me. I'm like, I almost felt honored. I was like, wow, you guys say you hate horror, but you're like, oh, we love this.
Was this them reaching out? Were they like, well, Katie does that Afraid podcast. Mm-hmm. Maybe she'll like this.
Yeah. Somebody called my parents the Afraidies once. And I was like, we're not going to do that. I was like, I'll cancel the podcast right now. I'll do it. I'll pull the plug right now.
So your parents know what you do for a living.
Yeah.
And they're basically on board.
Yeah. They're, okay. They're like, she does this thing. I don't know. But okay. We're not horror people, but yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
And the comedy and everything, they're not like.
Comedy, they love. They love the comedy.
Oh, okay. Oh,
they
good.
They love
okay.
that. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it's not a matter of.
It's just the horror movies.
This is a phase you're going through. Yeah, yeah.
She'll get a job at the bank eventually. You know, she'll get a real job one of these days. You know, that film thing, whatever.
It'll pass.
She went to LA to be an actor, whatever. Ugh.
Well, for you, it was a big deal because you're from Wisconsin.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm from L.A., so
yeah, you're like, for me, everybody's an actor here. Yeah.
Well, you know, my parents, it was really weird. Both of my parents and then everyone on my dad's side of the family and on my mom's side, it seemed like almost everyone was a teacher.
Yeah.
Everybody was LAUSD, and so we were in L.A., but it was not, you know, they weren't in the business.
Yeah.
So for them, there was a little bit of, wait, what do you want to do?
Yeah.
What is that all about? But at least geographically.
It like made sense.
I didn't have to get up and leave the state. You know, I just had to get in my car and drive 20 minutes.
Yeah, which is why I was like, oh, I'll go to Chicago because that's the closest. And then I lived there for 4 years and I was like, this city's too small. I was like, I need something bigger. And I was like, LA. And I'm like, LA feels small. And I'm like, it's not because you haven't explored half of it. So you should still. You know, there's a lot to explore.
So you're sort of, you're taking the Band-Aid off slowly.
Yeah,
guys, I'm leaving, but just over to Chicago.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
All right.
Yeah, because it's, you know, it's Chicago. It's not bad. It's not scary, but, you know, this is a spooky podcast, so, I don't know.
That is fantastic. Okay, let's just let this take effect.
The haze, real quick.
This is great. By the way, this is what...
It's just on you. It's just on you.
This is what an interview with Rod Serling looked like.
Good.
Just because of the cigarette smoke.
This is... It is only cigarette smoke in there. So I've been... I've been chain smoking all morning.
Cigarette smoke would actually be less lethal than whatever this is.
Correct, yes. I've inhaled so much of this smoke in my...
might want to go to a doctor.
Yeah, I think I might. You know what? But again, 27 Club, maybe? No, kidding. I don't want to. But I'm saying...
I'd say I'd say you've got two more years of good life left.
Thank you. That is so nice.
Well,
29. I'll get to 29.
I want to spread hope.
You'll get to 29. You'll be fine.
Yeah.
No, we're good. We're good. So let's talk the Mothman prophecies.
Let's do it.
Let's freaking do it. So you wrote that freaking movie.
Yes, I did.
Amazing.
Well, thank you for having me.
Of course.
This has been great.
This has been great. And that's the episode. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. So how did that idea come about? How did everything start?
I would
because that was, yeah, 2000.
Now, you've seen the movie,
yes,
right?
Yes, yes.
Okay. So I don't have to worry about spoilers.
No, you're good. No, okay.
She saw the trailer.
Yeah, I just saw the trailer. Oh. No, it also came out. It also came out in 2002. If people haven't seen it by now, that's their fucking fault. You know,
I'm looking at you, thinking you came out in 2002.
I'm a '90s baby, so. All
right. It was a different time. Young America was just discovering that Bill Clinton liked sex.
Mm-hmm.
What else? It was like 1997. And
the year I was born. Copy.
Well, there you go.
There we go. Okay. Perfect.
Yeah. Okay. So I had just started my career in film writing. Mm-hmm. But it was at a time when, for whatever reason, I guess what I was still sort of known for was Under Siege 2, Dark Territory.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of the things that I was, you know, going into meetings for were other action movies, mm-hmm. and things like that. And I was kind of heading in that direction. But personally in my life, I was, for whatever reason, on an upswing in my paranormal reading.
Mm-hmm.
And all my paranormal reading, I don't know what you do when you're at home alone, bored. But I'm reading these books about basically people having paranormal experiences, mm-hmm. which that's my favorite thing to read about.
Yeah.
I want to know. I've never had one. Maybe you have. I've never.
I worked
still
at the comedy
day,
store, so.
Which is haunted, right?
Very haunted. Yeah. I did a ghost tour with some influencers, and it's on YouTube. It's not great, but it's.
Do you ever witness anything, hear anything?
I definitely in the podcast studio specifically, because it's down the basement. That's where they had the illegal abortions down there. So there's a lot of like energy regardless. And everyone.
And that's all been just in the last couple of years.
Yeah, totally. But it's also like it was run by the mob before because it was Ciro's nightclub.
Yeah.
And very haunted, a lot of energy. I don't know. There was a back room that we had a lot of energy, and when I'd be downstairs by myself, I would always think my my boss, he was like in the other room, and I'd be like, "Oh, John's here," and I'd go and look and be like, "I swear to God, I heard somebody."
And
down
you'd
here.
Be like the only person in the building.
There's always somebody else in the building, but you don't
okay.
know because there's people in like the offices on like the third floor, but I never go up to the third floor, so it's like I'm the only person on the bottom floor.
Okay.
So
here's the only story that I know secondhand.
Mm-hmm.
I knew a guy named Scott Nimmerfro.
Okay, great last name.
It's a great, okay, so.
Nimmerfro.
Nimmerfro is a great last name.
Bless you.
Exactly. His email was Mr. Neverglad, which I always thought was really funny until the day he explained, oh, in German, that's what Nimmerfro means.
Oh.
And I'm like, oh, that's the perfect German name.
That's great. That's amazing.
Yeah. So Scott, God rest his soul, I worked with him on a show called The Gates.
Mm-hmm.
He's a writer. But he told me that he was a stage manager or some kind of property manager or something there at the comedy store.
Okay.
That would – it ended up with him being there late at night completely alone.
Yeah. That's when you get the weird shit.
Yeah, and he said he was there, and he told me, he's like, I would be there completely alone, no one there, silence for an hour,
mm-hmm.
and then suddenly in the room or in the hallway, a loud scream.
Yeah.
A scream.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, really?
You're so like, this somebody is not... got passed. Yay, at the store. Look at you.
Yeah, it's like this wasn't on the street. This mm-hmm. is like, no, it was inside the building. I mean, you know what a scream sounds like when it's happening in the next room.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if that's – anyway, that was the story I heard. So maybe that's from,
I've never heard a scream story. I've heard like people seeing, there's a man in a bowler hat who's
really,
he was a hitman during the when it first opened, and he sees it as Ciro's and as the Comedy Store. So if you're there after hours, he'll be like, you need to leave. You're not supposed to be here. Get out. Like, we're closed. Go.
That's so upsetting to me, because what does that say?
It's also sad, because it's like, it's just, you're dead and you're still working.
Yeah.
You can't rest.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Take a rest, buddy. He deserves it. You know what? He might be a good guy. Everyone's like, he killed people. I'm like, yeah, but you know what? He might have a good soul now, okay?
Well, not only
who knows? But maybe he's hot. I don't know.
What is his, what is he experiencing?
Yeah.
Like,
to be that angry, too.
Well, yeah. The idea that ghosts don't know.
Yeah.
It's like the ghost is confused, mm-hmm. because other people are in its house.
Yeah.
And I'm like, is that really what it is? Like, does something happen to you? You die, but you don't know you're dead.
Yeah.
And then you see people in your house. And how long does that go on? For you, is that just like an instant, but on the earth plane, mm-hmm. it lasts for decades or 100 years or whatever? Like, what that seems – here's what it says to me, though. Mm-hmm. The existence of any ghost says that what happens after we die isn't perfect either.
Yeah. Oh, totally.
Like, it's not like – because I think – sometimes I think it is. Mm-hmm. Like, you'll just die and then, like, a near-death experience.
Yeah.
It'll be great. There'll be a bright light and you'll go somewhere and – sort of automatically, you know you're dead. You see mm-hmm. your dead relatives. Everyone's like, you're dead. You get a life review.
Yeah.
Things are good. And someone comes up and explains things to you.
Yeah.
But then obviously not, because...
Yeah, sometimes there's people who are like, they don't know they're dead. Or and then they're in limbo. And you're like, and they try to get out of limbo. And you're just like, it's... And then some people are like, I just saw black. And you're like, what? What happened? And then you're like, you know what's going to be? It's a surprise. It's like a surprise party.
Know.
You die and it's a surprise party.
I don't like surprises.
I don't like surprises either.
I want to know.
Maybe
that's why. I think actually that is why I read these books.
Because you want something to like, okay, this is, yeah.
Yeah. It's like, you pick up, you know, Let's Go Paris.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, I want to find out, you know, where the restaurants are, where, you know, what I want to see.
Yeah.
You know, this is like a travel guide.
Yeah,
it's like, here's what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. Here are the things to look for. And, you know, the people who listen to my podcast know that I'm sort of obsessed with near-death experiences.
Okay.
And I really want to have one, except for the, you know, near-death part.
Oh, my God.
But I mean.
Because you want to see, but you don't want to.
Yes.
I think doing like DMT, I heard that's like a close to like, but then it's more spiritual enlightenment or whatever. I have a friend who's very into that, and I'm like, I hope you don't mind. I'm going to ask you like 5,000 questions because I'm so curious. I will never do it because apparently you start seeing eyeballs everywhere. And I was like, you know what? I already see enough things just with my active imagination. I don't need to see things because, you know, I don't need to see eyeballs, you know?
So I am also afraid of doing psychedelics.
Yeah. That's...
But since I'm older than you,
okay,
I have less – I feel like I'm less at risk. Like,
okay,
I've been talking about it more seriously nowadays. Like, well, there are ways to try LSD safely,
mm-hmm.
you know, or DMT.
Yeah.
And my wife says, you have to wait till you're 65. That's her cutoff.
Okay.
She's like, at that point, you will, you know, that's retirement age.
Yeah, your brain's already turning into mush. You might as well.
If something goes wrong.
You're fine.
You're
just straight. You're chilling for the rest of your life. You're fine.
Now exactly.
You're young. You got stuff to do.
Yeah. She's been saying it for years.
Okay.
Then recently she's like, when you're 60.
Oh.
I'm like, wait a second. You sound like you're hedging your bets on me a little now.
Like, it's like you're not doing as well as you thought you were.
It's like, you know, you're already slipping. You know,
honestly, if you want to do it at the end of the year, I think you'd be fine. Yeah.
Can things around the house get much worse?
Yeah.
Just enjoy yourself.
Yeah.
I'm fine.
You know,
she's pulling up stakes on the relationship. I don't blame her. Anyway, but let's talk about the Mothman prophecies.
Yes, we were saying, how did you come up with the concept? We'll go back to paranormal in a second.
I was so fascinated with these stories about people having real life strange experiences.
Yes.
And I'm like, that's really, like, I could hear that stuff all day.
Mm-hmm.
And you go somewhere, you go out to dinner with people, they start telling you their story. Mm-hmm. I'm like, this is the most interesting thing. Like, this is what I want in entertainment. I would love to see a movie. The problem is a movie must have structure. Totally. And it must have a story. When people tell their paranormal stories, the middle is awesome.
Yeah.
The beginning is great.
Yeah.
There's no ending.
Totally.
And I'm like, well, that's what every supernatural movie or horror movie or ghost movie comes up against. They, mm-hmm. they intriguing stuff at the beginning, really cool stuff in the middle. But at a certain point, narrative logic has to take over.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
And you can't just back off on that. So, but that's what ruins the movie for me. Mm-hmm. Because the minute you sort of impose narrative logic, you betray the charm of the story. The totally. Charm of the story is, and then we moved out of that apartment, mm-hmm. and we have no idea why it happened.
Yep.
It never happened again. Yep. It was this weird thing. That's it.
Yeah.
How do you make a movie about that? So I that was sort of just kind of circling in my head for a few months.
Yeah.
Then I found the book, The Mothman Prophecies, mm-hmm. which was so interesting because it sort of acknowledged that the strange part is the story.
Yeah.
And the main character in the book is John Keel, the author of the book. And it's not a novel. It's him writing about going to Point Pleasant, West Virginia, investigating, at first, I guess it was UFO sightings. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, people were seeing this creature that within a couple of days, the local press called Mothman, mm-hmm. simply because Batman was a television show.
Yep.
I mean, that was it.
Oh, yeah.
That's the reason Mothman is called Mothman.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Chicago is very famous.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
he's
yeah, yeah.
Apparently in Chicago all the time.
Yeah.
And one time when I was living in Chicago, was like, I'm going to go find Mothman. And I've heard he's actually really scary, and I don't even know.
Yeah,
he's
no,
real.
Don't go looking.
Like, yeah, I don't really want to. I don't want to know, you know. But I want to know, but I don't want to know.
Quick aside, you are an editor, right?
Yes.
Get ready.
We're keeping it in. We're keeping it in.
That's less work for you.
Right. All right. It's also part of the fun, of the charm. If you hack right into the mic, that's like the audio people are gonna be like, "Holy God."
Well, look, if this was
that's
my
how we
podcast,
wake people up in the middle of a podcast.
Yeah.
I was going to say, if this was my podcast and you were filming it, there'd be a martini right here.
Oh,
and it would just be, you know, so that would, you know, help me out.
Oh, yes.
I'm not complaining.
Bring in the
fine.
Martini.
Yeah, next time.
Okay, bring in the martini.
Now
we'll
know.
Yeah.
Anyway, okay, so the book itself is about this guy's experience investigating the paranormal and his almost overwhelming urge to make the pieces fit.
Okay.
So I thought, well, this is really interesting because the structure of this book and the reality of it is about the problem I'm having in structuring a story.
Mm-hmm.
So I leaned into the notion of how we as human beings want answers to these things.
Totally.
And I kind of felt like if I can make that part of the narrative, then it gives me a kind of a get out of jail free card,
mm-hmm.
because one of the possible answers is there is no answer.
Yeah.
And that was the answer in the Mothman Prophecies.
Yeah.
It was the harder I tried to make it make sense, the more it eluded me,
mm-hmm.
which is to me the truth of all paranormal experiences.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
And it also takes into account this sort of constant debate between skeptics and believers, uh-huh. and everyone in between, which is, well, as soon as science can prove it, I'll believe it. And
science has proved a lot, and you still don't believe it. So it's like
you don't believe in vaccines.
Yeah,
so
it's like
you're not going to believe in
fucking Mothman, but
right.
you know, go off.
Yeah. But there are people who do they use science as they should,
mm-hmm.
as sort of a measuring stick for all reality.
Yeah,
and I think it's a great measuring stick for a lot of reality.
Yeah.
And it is the measuring stick you should use.
Yeah,
but I also feel like in my life, much of my experience as a human being is made up of things against which that is not a very good measuring stick.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Wanting to be in show business,
mm-hmm.
you know, wanting to succeed. If if I took out the measuring stick of harsh reality,
oh yeah,
I never and you never would have moved anywhere and decided to study anything that wasn't pharmacy, you know, and where would that get you? And where does it get you in life when you're dealing with human beings?
Yeah.
It doesn't get you very far. There are things that we wish we could use science to prove and to lock down. Mm-hmm. And it's the most important things to me in life, things that have to do with emotions and your internal experiences. So that's what I wanted to explore in the movie. Mm-hmm. And again, but that's going to be tough.
Yeah.
I got in touch through my agent.
Okay.
With John Keel.
Cool.
The guy who had written the book.
Yeah.
And he was a very curmudgeonly New York writer. I mean, picture a guy who's making his living in the 50s writing short pieces for men's magazines and also writing fiction.
Yeah.
He was coming up at the same time as guys like Kurt Vonnegut, you know, and that's when you writing a short piece, you could make a living if you do one a week and they sell. Anyway, he'd had bad experiences, but we talked on the phone a few times and wrote letters to each other.
Wow.
Because it was 1997.
Yeah, pen pals.
Yes. So anyway, we did that. After a while, he began to trust me. Mm-hmm. I wrote the script, which was a challenging experience because there weren't a lot of movies I could use as roadmaps. Mm-hmm. But I wrote it, and then came the moment of, okay, will Hollywood, will studios be interested in a movie that is not strictly a horror movie?
Yeah.
It's got scary, weird stuff in it.
Totally.
And there's a tone to it, but will they go for it?
Yeah.
And the answer, of course, was no.
They hated it. They're like...
Didn't sell.
It did not sell. It did not do well at all.
No. It was rejected outright because of the problem I pointed out. They're all like, yes, but at what point does your main character fight the Mothman?
You're like, it's not an action movie. It's not Richard Gere versus Mothman.
Exactly.
Which honestly, that would be like a good...
That would also be awesome.
I feel like Tubi would pick that up pretty quick now.
I think they would.
That'd be amazing.
Yeah. And believe me, there are those movies.
Yeah, oh yeah. But this isn't that movie.
This isn't that movie. Mm-hmm. So anyway, it took another path, but it got there, and I'm glad it did.
Yeah.
But it was never going to be a traditional horror movie. Mm-hmm. It was always going to be a movie that was more about, which is why I think it's done better recently. Like, it's aged very well, let's put it that way. Because I think when a movie first comes out, an audience, quite rightly, is like, well, what is this? What am I paying for?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's Sinners, there's going to be vampires, got it.
Yeah.
And Sinners delivers.
Yeah.
All right? With this movie, it was like, well, wait, is it a horror? Like, I guess they're not going to show you all the horror stuff in the trailer, but a lot of people went and saw it and were expecting one thing and got another and were disappointed.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I get that.
But weirdly, over time...
People have started, like, appreciating it more.
Well, it just sort of comes around. It's like, I heard that movie is this, not that.
Yeah.
And once you kind of know what to expect, I think you'll like the movie better.
Yeah.
So, anyway,
That's amazing. That hell of an answer. Hell of an answer.
I tried to give you my shortest answer.
That was your shortest? That was amazing. That was...
I could have given you the 3-hour version.
Oh, my God.
But,
That's for the Patreon listeners.
That's right.
So how long did it take you to from like writing the whole thing and how many drafts? Because I'm always curious about that. And I know my viewers are like the writing process.
Well, what I did was I got in touch. It was like, okay, April of 97, I think, when I first talked to John Keel. And then it was a matter of, okay, well, you know, move this along. My agent was telling me just... pitch it. Just go out. I'll set up meetings. Just do a 15-20 minute pitch.
Yeah.
And then if someone wants it, they'll pay you to write it. There's no reason for you to write something and not get paid to do it.
Yeah.
But my problem at the time, not really my problem, but my method was, I'm not even sure what this is yet.
Yeah.
And I'm not really a salesman. I can't really at first just go, hey, trust me, here's a few cool scenes. It's going to be this, it's going to be that, especially mm-hmm. because it was not going to be a traditional narrative.
Totally.
So I really had to know what the hell I was doing, mm-hmm. and I didn't. So I had to sit down and write the pitch. And my agent's like, you're writing the pitch? Oh my gosh, these other people just go out and talk. I'm like, I know, but I'm not that guy yet.
Yeah.
I mean, my career hasn't really even started yet.
Yeah.
So I've got to figure this out. So I sat and for 2.5 months wrote out a 45-page document that was literally every scene in the movie.
Oh my God.
In order,
yeah.
with dialogue.
Okay.
It was basically an outline.
Yeah. Oh, totally.
But I'm like, I can't pitch it until I know I can do it.
Mm-hmm.
And so it took me all that time to figure out, can I do it? So 2-3 months in,
yeah.
I finally said, I've got the pitch. Can I come and do it for you? And he's like, yeah, that'd be great. And I'm like, but to be clear, it's 45 pages and I have to read it. And God bless him. God bless you. God bless you, David Saunders at APA. He said, absolutely. Come on down on Thursday. And read it. Read me your pitch.
Mm-hmm.
And I did. And it took over an hour. It's kind of like my podcast. So I did it. And he sat there, listened to every word.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end, I looked up and he said, how long would it take you to actually write the script at this point? And I said, oh, at this point, a month. He's like, then just write it.
Yeah.
He's like, you're there. No one's going to sit around for an hour of this.
Yeah. Yeah. You're like, you're just go. He saw that you like this. He was like, oh, do it this way. Cause that's what everyone else does.
Yes.
But your brain doesn't work that way. And you're like, I have to do it this way, I get that.
Which was great. And so a month, maybe 5 weeks later, I had the script and he read it and he said, this is the best spec script I've ever read.
Wow.
He's like, we're going to sell this for $1 million.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. And sure enough, the following week, we sent it out.
Mm-hmm.
And on that Monday, everyone had passed and we sold it for no money. So anyway, so my advice to agents now is, here's what you do. You read a script, you love it. You tell your client, it's going to be a tough one.
Yeah.
I mean, it's good, but you're going to need some help with this one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Let me see what I can do.
Yeah.
Okay? Maybe I can get this across the finish line.
Mm-hmm.
All right? You sit back, start working on your next one, by the way,
because
I'm not sure about this.
Just in case, yeah.
I know it's good. You know it's good, but out there,
yeah, you don't
this
know.
Is going to take a little razzle-dazzle from a guy in a suit to make this happen.
Yeah.
Then call me up a week later and say, guess who just sold your script for $1 million? This is what you do when you're an agent.
Yes. The bar needs to be low. So
set
that,
it low.
Set it really low.
Set it low.
Set it lower. Put your, like, you're not going to get it sold.
Right.
And then when it does happen, you're like, wow.
You're the hero.
The bare minimum. Yay. Like, we get excited about the bare. Oh, you sold the script. That's what we were going to do. That's
right.
What we were supposed to do.
One penny above Writers Guild minimum,
mm-hmm.
and you're a hero.
You're like, look at you. Yeah. You're so brave. Also, I like that you said razzle dazzle.
Yeah.
I immediately started singing Razzle Dazzle from Chicago from that.
Good.
Richard Gere.
That was my,
also say, I
that
was
like, my subliminal
was like,
cue for
give
you.
Give him the own.
But I do want to say,
yes.
I do want to say that as every good agent does, that was not the end of the story. And he kept taking it around.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually about 4 months later, a deal was set up at Lakeshore Entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
And what was interesting about Lakeshore, I'd never heard of it.
Mm-hmm.
And my agent said, I advise that you take this deal because they're not paying you a lot. You know, this is a very low price they're
Richard.
Offering.
Are you going to tell her $499?
What?
Are you going to tell her the $499 check that you got for that?
Wait. Is this a story I've told you?
It went from $1 million to $499.95.
Pretty much. It was a low, but look, it was a low price. It was more than that.
It was at least 500. Come on.
I mean, come on. again.
You're lowballing. Come on now.
Again, the agent did better than that. But what he said was, he said, the thing about Lakeshore is they make everything they buy. This is not a development deal. They're not going to buy it and then sit on it for 2 years and then hand it back to you.
Yeah.
Because of their financing, they have to make everything they buy. If they buy something, they make it. This movie will get made.
Cool.
So I was like, well, okay, that's something.
Yeah.
And there'll be a bonus upon, you know,
yeah,
commencement of principal photography, conclusion of principal photography. Mm-hmm. Okay, great. So there will be more money to come. And they bought it and they made it. And they made it well. I mean, yeah. I was very happy with the way it came out. I was very happy with Richard Gere.
Yeah.
I was very happy with Mark Pellington.
Yeah.
And, you know, you asked about how many drafts.
Yeah.
For me, there was really, you know, I mean, I worked on it for a few weeks. Yeah. So whatever drafts I did, but it was basically one draft.
Yeah.
And then it went out.
Love that.
Then for Lakeshore, I did one rewrite.
Mm-hmm.
And then they said, thank you very much. Now we're going to go do our thing. I was then more or less not fired off the movie, but it was like, okay, we're now going to, you know, try to get Richard Gere involved.
Yeah.
And once Richard Gere is involved, he may have other writers he wants to bring on.
Totally.
You know, and a director might have other writers they want to bring on.
Mm-hmm.
It went through rewrites. Other people did other drafts that I know nothing about.
Okay.
And then Mark Pellington, who had done Arlington Road for Lakeshore, had read the first draft, and then he went off and did other things. And then a couple years later, like literally 2 years later, came back and they're like, look, we're still making this movie. Do you want to do it? And he said, oh, well, let me read it. And he read one of their more recent drafts. And he's like, wait, this isn't the one that I read 2 years ago. Is this the same thing? And they're like, well, you know, it's gone through changes. He's like, well, let me see the original script again. Let me read that again. Because I remember liking it.
Yeah.
He went back, he read it. He's like, well, I'll make this one. So if you want to make this movie, which was ultimately, again, the rewrite that I'd done for them.
Yeah.
So I had still, you know, sort of put my, you know, signature on that draft.
Yeah.
And he's like, I'll do this one. And they're like, great. And by then, Richard Gere, I guess, had gone through his cycle of, well, I had writers that I like take a shot at it.
Yeah.
But at that point, he was like, yeah, great, let's do it.
Yeah.
So they all were on board. Everyone was on board. And then, now, to be fair, Mark Pellington did say, I work with these two other writers.
Mm-hmm.
And so on set, I'll be with them. If changes need to be made, they'll be making it. But he said to me personally, I love your draft, and that's the movie we're going to make.
Yeah.
And what was I going to say? No, fuck you. I was look, this is the best deal I'm going to get in Hollywood as a guy who has never had a movie produced of his own.
Yep.
I, you know, Dark Territory happened, but that was a Steven Seagal movie.
Mm-hmm.
I had written it with Matt Reeves, you know, and that was a different thing. This was my first movie. So I was like, please go with God. I trust you.
Yep.
And he did. And the movie he made was 90% my movie. So
that's awesome.
And in spirit and in tone and in everything that's important, that the sense of the uncanny and struggling with the idea that there are things we're never going to understand.
Oh, totally.
All that stuff is there. And it's what he wanted and it's what I wanted. Mm-hmm. And so I was really, really happy with the way it came out.
Yeah,
and every time I watch it, I'm happier.
Really? Okay, that's awesome. I was also going to ask, is there any... Like, was there anything that you wrote that when you see on screen, you're like, ah, that's not what I thought of, but I like what they did, or I wish they would have done it a different way?
Not really. There's stuff that there were scenes that were written and filmed that were then cut out of the film. And I understand why. But if I'm going to sit back and go, well, you know, you can do anything you want, it would be like, oh, yeah, put in a little more of, you know, like lengthen the part of the story where his wife is dying in the hospital.
Oh, yeah.
There's a few others, but I totally get, as a filmmaker, it's like, yeah, those are the scenes you cut. You want to get him to Will Patton's front door as quickly as possible.
Yeah, totally.
You do, and I'm glad they did.
Yeah.
There were maybe a few other scenes about his relationship with Laura Linney that I was like, oh, I kind of wish we'd gotten just a little bit more of that, but I think you get it.
Oh, yeah.
I think you get that, oh, yeah, there's a friendship and a colleagueship. But there also might be an emotional, long-lasting relationship that the end of the movie signals the beginning of.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that comes across, too.
Yeah,
so I'm really happy with it.
I love that. Good. I mean, it's, you know, I would hope you'd be happy with it. But I feel like some people, you know, they don't get exactly what you know, they envisioned. And, you know, it's just...
They don't. Yeah. Most people, especially in feature films, mm-hmm. there's always a good chance that any individual writer who worked at any individual point on any given movie will not see what they want on screen. And they will not feel that their story is being told. Mm-hmm. I got lucky early in my career. I got this, and then I got a TV show called Miracles, which mm-hmm. was basically the TV show of the Mothman Prophet. I mean, it was all the same things. Yeah. It was not those characters, but it spiritually kind of was.
Yeah, it was the same. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it was about investigating the unknown mm-hmm. from a place of, okay, the stuff happens. We're not really disproving stuff, but what does it mean?
Yeah.
And I got to do that. So early on, I sort of, as they say, got fed.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, I was able to sit back and go, okay, I did my movie. I did my TV show. Now I can just sort of work.
Yeah.
And enjoy other people's ideas and try to help them get their thing across the finish line. And literally that's been the bulk of my career, which has been really fun. Yeah. That's been the fun part and still is.
Yeah. Look, good job. You're freaking doing it.
Oh, you kids and your fist bumps.
You're freaking doing it. Or sorry, would you prefer a low five?
Yes.
A low five?
There we go.
That's because... My dad is a big low fiver. He's like, low five. Because apparently the high five wasn't invented to I forget when it was.
Was the low five during Prohibition?
It was first. Like the low five was first. No one did high five to
Was the first recorded one, White Men Can't Jump?
Because I helped with... PA on Winning Time, that show.
Oh.
And they had to go and reshoot stuff because they were giving high fives to people and the high five hadn't been invented yet. Everyone was doing low fives, so they had to go reshoot it for the low fives. And I was like, what an oddly specific detail,
Sorry, our five consultant.
Yeah, I was like,
stepped up and said, no deal.
That's not historically accurate. Like, that's fascinating.
Wait,
so
what year is this?
I don't. The Winning Time takes place during when Kareem and Magic were on the.
So the 80s?
Yeah, like the 80s, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's not that long ago.
I swear I did
high
fives in the 80s.
That's what they were saying, that they were like, yeah, they didn't high five. And I was like, that doesn't make.
Katie's right about the 80s in history books.
Yeah.
I mean, if they did it in Ohio, they didn't do it in LA.
That's what they said. That's why I was like, I don't know exactly. I'm not going to give an exact date and give you wrong information. But
did people have hands back then? I thought that was a recent evolutionary.
Hands were just grown. You guys didn't have those? You guys had those in the 80s, right? No, but that's what they said. And it was just, that's off topic. But anyways, it's fine. It's fine. So... what was the first movie to scare you as a kid? Horror movie or not?
Oh, not a horror movie. The first movie that scared me was the first movie I ever saw.
Okay, what was it?
Which was Scrooge, the Albert Finney musical.
Oh my God.
I saw it when I was 4 years old. And it was an overwhelming experience from beginning to end.
Mm-hmm.
I experienced every human emotion. Before I was four, I didn't know there were others besides fear and depression.
Okay, that's good.
But in
good.
This movie, I finally found out, there was also joy and happiness and mm-hmm. dancing and British. Is that an emotion?
Uh-huh.
Is British its own thing?
Correct.
Okay, I experienced British.
So brave.
It was, at a very young age. Yeah. I didn't know. I walked into a movie theater. I had no idea what I was going to get. That's mm-hmm. what I got. The music was overwhelming.
Yeah.
Everything was overwhelming. And then it was scary.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if you've seen... Have you seen that one?
The only Scrooge I've seen...
That's the black and white one, right?
No, it's full color, musical.
The only Scrooge I've seen is the one with...
Bill Murray?
Yeah.
I knew you were going to say that.
That's...
Well, you have some work to do holiday season.
I've seen a lot of movies, but I also haven't seen shit. I think people don't realize how many movies are actually out there. Someone asked me, have you
more
seen
more every day, I hear.
Yeah, and because if you count Tubi, if you count YouTube, then what? And then if you count... So everyone's like, have you seen every horror movie? I'm like, I would try to to go back. Yeah. And then when did horror movies start? Are we talking like snuff films with like people being like hung at and like their guillotine, like when they were filming those? Does that count? Like in when like what when was film invented? I'm literally like
I don't know. I think it was the 80s.
The 80s, the 89 film in general, like
it was the 1880s.
Yeah, 1880s. Yeah,
I feel pretty good about that. I mean, we both went to film school.
Yeah, I was like,
we should know.
Yeah, I was like 1800s makes sense.
Close enough.
Yeah, but like during those times, they were filming like, you know, people being beheaded and stuff. And we're not talking like a terrorist group doing that, but we're talking like in like the you get
this took a dark turn.
That's what we do.
Even
that's
for
what
Katie
we do. We're afraidy here. It's fine. But yeah, and they're like, does that count? And I'm like, you know what? That's just I'm gonna watch what I want to watch.
Look,
and
which you should. That's what you should do, and you'll find your way. And the great thing is, okay, you say that now, and I'm much older than you are, and I went to film school too, and I've worked in the industry, and I sneer at people who have not seen things. Mm-hmm. Last Monday night, for the first time, I watched The French Connection. Okay? This is a movie that, you know, won some Academy Awards. Yep. People talk about it. One of Gene Hackman's early great roles. Mm-hmm. I've seen a lot of stuff. I had never seen The French Connection. Yep. People don't talk about the movies they haven't seen. Mm-hmm. They only talk about the ones they have seen. Mm-hmm. And by doing that, they can sound like they've seen everything.
Oh, totally.
And I only tell people once I see the movie. So okay. I'll be like, oh, finally saw it. I'll admit right here, I still have never seen 2001: A Space Odyssey.
I've never seen it either.
Yeah, well, I don't know.
I'll get on it eventually. The list is so long of things I have to watch. So.
But Scrooge was the first one.
Okay, Scrooge is, I will go home and immediately watch that.
Well, watch it through the eyes of your inner four-year-old. It'll be easy for you. It was just a couple of years ago.
Yeah, true.
And then you'll understand what a young Richie Haddam went through in a movie theater.
Mm-hmm.
Again, the full range of emotion. So when I left, I literally felt like the walls of my emotional house had been kicked down.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're being rebuilt further and further away from me. I suddenly contained whole ranges of human experience that that literally 2 hours before I hadn't. Mm-hmm. My body was trembling. I saw it with my cousins and my aunt and uncle and my parents and my brother. And we all went out to dinner afterwards. And I still remember that feeling of like my body humming, like something has changed dramatically in reality for me now. And that was huge. Mm-hmm. And movies became that. They became the central emotional experience that I could have. So that one, that was the first one that scared me.
Mm-hmm.
After that, and again, you talk to people my age, I'm in my late 50s, I'm 58.
Mm-hmm.
It was commercials that scared me.
Okay.
It was the commercial for Alien. It was the commercial for Dawn of the Dead.
Mm-hmm.
The commercial for a movie called Magic.
Okay.
With Anthony Hopkins, where he played a ventriloquist.
And there was the puppet. Yeah. No,
yeah.
Yeah. We don't want that.
And the commercial was just the puppet, talking.
Mm-mm.
And at the end, the puppet goes, "Magic is fun. We are dead."
What the fuck?
It was terrifying. If that commercial came on after dark, I was ruined.
Yeah, you're done. That's nope. I hate that. Yeah.
And it was a thing that people my age, like decades later, I would be talking with Matt.
Yeah.
You know, about, and I'm like, remember the Magic commercial? This is, you know, we'd been friends for 20 years, never talked about it. The commercial was on, you know, 35 years before that.
Yeah.
And we both go, "Magic is fun. We are dead."
I hate that. It's like the earworms of like JG or Wentworth 877 cash net. Like you're like,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. But you're like, it's
part of your life.
Like that's scary. This is more like, you know, they branded really hard, but like that's just terrifying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I was afraid. It's like I wanted to see Dawn of the Dead.
Yeah.
But I was afraid to see Dawn of the Dead.
Oh, totally.
I wanted to see Alien, but I was afraid to. So there were a lot of movies sort of in my middle school years that I didn't actually see until I got into high school.
Mm-hmm.
And then I ended up seeing them in a theater because in South Pasadena we had the Rialto, which showed non-first run movies. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like the new Beverly Cinema yeah. is now. And so you could actually have that experience. You could go see those movies. And by then I was in high school and I was seeing it with my friends. And then it was like, all right, I can handle this. Mm-hmm. And by then, really, movies weren't scary anymore. Yeah. They were fun, you know? And at that age, scary movies are fun.
That's
especially if you're a guy, it's like, okay, I did something to scare myself, but I survived it. I'm a man.
Yeah. Exactly. Which is exactly why I watch them. I'm like, yeah, bro out. Yeah.
You bro out.
Yeah, all the time. All the time.
What was your scary movie?
It wasn't a scary movie, per se. It was the first movie that scared me, but... Jurassic Park freaked me out as a kid.
Oh, yeah. I get that.
I still, to this day, I know that dinosaurs are extinct. I understand that.
Okay.
But I still subconsciously think that there is a velociraptor behind my shower curtain. There was never a scene with that. I just think that that's, I always think
one. That would be
great. And then the second one is Spider-Man, the Spider-Man with Sam Raimi with the Green Goblin.
Oh my
that
God!
That terrified me as a kid.
Absolutely.
With like the gas chamber, and when he dies, and you're just like,
well, how old were you when you saw that?
I saw it probably when it came out, so that came out 2001.
So you were four.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Again, where were our parents?
I have an older brother who's 12 years older, so he traumatized me. Yeah.
Okay.
He's the one who showed me horror movies, and that's why I'm here.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, was he the guy who showed you movies throughout your life, horror
yes.
or otherwise?
Yeah, he's like, we should watch this, you should see this, and he got me into paranormal stuff, he got me into everything, but I was initially terrified, and he came home one day, and I was watching Cabin in the Woods, and I was just like, I'm so scared. He's like, it's a comedy. And
it's
I was like,
comedy.
Oh, but now in my head, I just think all horror is comedy. So and that's kind of, I think, why I like it. I'm like, this isn't scary. This is funny. So that's now I'm just fucked up.
Well, it's, you know, you bring that up. It's like these are two genres that are matched in that they're overtly trying for a visible, visceral, physical mm-hmm. reaction, a laugh or a scream.
Totally. And they go hand in hand.
That's
why I say comedians are the best actors, and because they understand timing.
Yeah.
And they make great horror actors because horror is all about timing.
Yeah. And you know if it's working.
Yeah.
Like if you make a horror movie and you show it to an audience,
yep.
just like a comedy, mm-hmm. if they're screaming, the horror movie's working. If they're laughing, the comedy's working. Mm-hmm. Comedy is commonly used to sort of help you pace a horror film.
Totally.
You know, or at least down moments.
Yeah.
You know? Which I think a lot of movies don't get.
Yeah.
That you do need to release the tension mm-hmm. and bring the needle back down and then build it back up.
Yep.
And it seems pretty obvious, but a lot of movies don't do it.
They don't do that.
And then, of course, you have the horror comedies like Ghostbusters mm-hmm. or American Werewolf in London.
Yes.
That have some scares. Mm-hmm. But also have a lot of laughs. And if you can do that, and there's not that many of them that can do it well, but that's why Ghostbusters and American Werewolf in London are two of my favorite movies.
Yeah.
And Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein. Have
Classic.
You seen it?
I have not.
Okay.
You I'll watch
see
it
just to
yes.
know it. See it with your brother,
yeah.
Even your parents.
Yeah.
And you will appreciate, oh, I see. This was the 1940s example mm-hmm. of this exact same principle.
I love that. That's amazing. Whoa, we are running out of time here. But I know,
Katie.
We could talk forever. We're having so much fun. I would talk to you all day if we could.
All right.
But
I'll come back maybe?
Yes. Oh my God, I'd love to have you back.
Okay, good.
I'd love to have you back. Where can the people find you? And this is the point where you look at the camera and you can plug anything, whatever you want to do.
Okay, you can find me at Richard Haddam's Paranormal Bookshelf. It's my podcast. I talk about paranormal books and I talk about myself. When I say I talk about myself, I tell a story from my life. It's kind of like The Moth, except it's just me. I think you'll enjoy it.
The Moth Man.
Wow. It was sitting right there and I didn't pick it up. Well, you got it.
I got you. One of us had to say it. Okay, I'm done. Continue.
Anyway, check out the podcast. I think you'll like it. Richard Haddam's Paranormal Bookshelf.
Amazing. Well, thank you.
Wherever you buy your podcasts.
Heck yeah. Same with this one. Well, thank you so much for being on.
Thank you for having me.
Of course.
This was great.
We would like to give a huge thanks to a few of our sponsors. Film Craft Studio Gear, where you can get any gear you're looking for all production needs. Go to filmcraftla.com, or you can find them at filmcraftla on Instagram. And of course, a big shout out to Fangoria. Want a copy of a Fangoria magazine? Use code KatieAfrady25 for 25% off. KatieAfrady25 for 25% off.
Well, those ads were awesome. Great. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. And make sure to like, subscribe, all that jazz, Katie Afraidy on all social media platforms. And we will see you next time. Stay Afraidy.
Damn, great.
Yay! Thank you so much.
Thank you. That was so great. I hope I did okay.
Oh my God,
that was so great.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at lower.com field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at columbuscrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.